The theme for this talk was virtually thrust upon me, first by a question put to me during a recent visit to the Midlands, and secondly by a letter which I read in a religious magazine. Question posed by an old gentleman asked simply, "Did God create evil?" And the letter written by a lady said, "Like Jacob of old, I am forced to say all things are against me. Since my beloved husband died a short month ago, my only son has become crippled. I am confined to my room with sickness, and my only daughter is almost worn out with taking care of us. My faith is terribly staggered. When I try to say, 'Thy will be done,' it sticks in my throat. Does God not sometimes make mistakes?" Now, that is not a new question, nor a new problem by any means. In fact, both are centuries old, millenniums old, in fact. Certainly we can genuinely sympathize with that lady and her trouble, and yet you see that she was really trying to lay the blame at God's door, suggesting that God in some way may have been responsible for her trouble. She said, "My faith is terribly staggered," and I think that her letter reveals this. But notice, her faith may be down, but it certainly isn't out, because she doesn't issue the resentful, aggressive challenge so frequently heard in cases of suffering, "If there is a God, why?" even though the why is there in her letter, only rather more concealed. Now, I can understand her reaction. In fact, I can go to the book of Judges and hear Gideon, the great man of God, making the same kind of protest. You may remember that the book of Judges deals with that period in Israelitish history before the nation had its own king, and when, having rejected God and lacking effective leadership, the people fell into idolatry. The book covers a period of about 300 years, and during that time, God allowed enemies to oppress his people and sent them deliverers when they resented and wished to return to him. These deliverers were called judges, and Gideon turned out to be one of them. When we first see him in chapter 6, he has already gained a reputation as a fighter against the current scourge of his people, the Midianites. Actually, the Midianites didn't occupy the Israelites' territory. Rather, during a period of 7 years, they terrorized the people, making powerful raids on the country, like locusts. Like locusts, they had stripped the land of everything of value, so that Israel was quite impoverished. Judges chapter 6 and verse 6 describes Israel as a door swinging on broken hinges. There was no safety, no security, no sufficiency. You may judge how bad the situation was when you hear that Gideon was trying to thresh a little wheat that he'd managed to hold back in a wine press, in a hole in the ground, as silently as possible so that he might escape the attention of the Midianites. And just then God's messenger came and said, "Gideon, the Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor." Well, if anything sounded unlikely under those circumstances, that was it. And Gideon's response was very blunt and very much to the point. "If the Lord is with us, why," and there it is again, "why then is all this befallen us?" Now that was more than 1,000 years before Jesus Christ came. So you see how ancient this problem is. And yet, it is not a question that belongs to the remote past, as we very well know. It is one that we very often encounter today, perhaps in our own lives, as well as in the lives of other people. We hear it in the sick room. "Why? Why am I suffering?" By the graveside. "Why?" In time of war. "Why?" Whenever calamity or disaster or poverty or hardship strikes. "Why? Why? Why?" And usually, it's preceded by, "If God is a God of love," or "If God really cares," or "If there is a God," or "If God really exists," or "If God is all-powerful." Now, I do not claim to be able to provide the answer to all of these searching, anguished questions. Indeed, they are usually asked at a time when no answer that may be given would be acceptable anyway. They are usually asked when the pain is sharpest or the wound is deepest. They are cries of anguished hearts, voices raised in protest, at a time when the person involved is not really expecting an answer, nor ready to receive one. He is expressing the grief through which he's passing, and he really doesn't want to discuss it rationally at that moment. When a mother has just lost her only child and she cries, "Why? Why?" you know that she's in no state to sit down and to listen to any kind of explanation. And there were Bible characters, too, who behaved just like this. Job once exclaimed, "Why didn't I die at birth?" Elijah exclaimed, "Let me die, for I am no better than my fathers." And Jeremiah cried, "Cursed be the day wherein I was born." Now these are cries of souls in pain, and one cannot reason with them until the edge has worn off the pain and they are able to listen. So what can be said in answer to this question, "Did God create evil?" or "Doesn't God sometimes make mistakes?" What is the solution? Are such things as suffering and pain and sorrow permitted by God? Or does God sometimes make mistakes? Or is it that God is unable to do anything about these things? Well, for the Christian, solutions 2 and 3 are clearly unthinkable and unacceptable. God doesn't make mistakes because one of his attributes is omniscience. He has total knowledge. Now, men make mistakes because they simply do not possess the full facts, but God always knows, and so he never makes mistakes. And again, another attribute of God is that God is omnipotent. He is all-powerful. So we can never imagine God having to stand by helpless, wanting to help but not able to do so. And this leaves us with solution number 1, that God, all-knowing as he is and all-powerful, permits us to suffer. Now instantly this raises another problem, at least for some people. They ask, if God knows, and if God has the power to help, and still allows these unpleasant things to happen in our lives, is it because he doesn't care? Now that is exactly what Satan, the power for evil, wants us to think. Well, yes, I believe in the devil. I believe in a personal devil, just as I believe in a personal God. You can't go very far in the world today, friends, without seeing a good deal of devilishness in one form or another. You still have to explain the whole problem of evil, the origin of evil. I know that some time ago an American suggested that God is dead. I don't accept that, of course. But I've never yet heard anybody suggest that the devil is dead, because somebody is carrying on his business for him. I believe in a devil, and I think you should as well. And I suspect that both you and I alike have had dealings with him. Well, it's all part of the devil's plan to persuade men that God simply doesn't care. And he began like that, so the Bible tells us. He said to Eve, "God doesn't want you to eat of that fruit there in the garden, because he knows that if you do, you'll become as great as he is. God is actually denying you something to which you have a right." Or he says again, "God surely can't be a God of love to allow a person like you to suffer. What have you done to deserve this? Certainly God isn't very concerned about you." So let me suggest one or two thoughts that might throw a little light on the nature of this problem, the problem of pain. First, there is the fact that this is not the world as God originally made it. We are living in a world that has become disorganized and disordered, because sin has been let loose in it. When the world was created, God saw that everything was good, the Bible says. But man sinned, and man has been sinning ever since, and he has been suffering as the consequence of sin ever since. In other words, man was given the ability to choose between obeying his Creator and living in fellowship with him, or asserting his own will in opposition to the will of God, and accepting the consequences of which he had been plainly warned. I stress that man chose. It wasn't God's doing. And because man was given freedom of choice, he also had the freedom to choose wrongly and to bear the consequences of a wrong choice. Paul says, "Sin entered, and death by sin. And death has passed upon all men, because all have sinned." Romans 5, verse 12. So, this is point number 1. A great deal of the world's suffering is the inevitable result of sin, of the violation of the will of God, of disobedience to the law of God. But someone says, "Yes, but why do the innocent suffer?" We can accept that when we do wrong, we bring suffering on ourselves, but why didn't God arrange it that only the guilty suffer? If I were God, I would see to it that nobody ever suffered for the wrongs of other people. Then I would like to know how you'd manage to do that. Because as human beings, we're so closely bound together that it's impossible for us to distance ourselves from the actions and the consequence of the actions of other people. In fact, if you could so manipulate man's nature that you were able to render him insensitive to suffering caused by other people, disconnect him from the wrong of others, so to speak, I think you would succeed only in turning him into a horrible kind of being. You say that only the guilty should suffer for the wrong they do. Very well. Here is a young man who commits a crime and goes to prison. In your kind of world, that young man's mother would turn around and say, he's gone to prison for 20 years? So, I don't care. It doesn't affect me. Now, can you imagine that kind of a mother? A mother incapable of suffering when her children suffer? Is that the kind of world that you want? Where only the guilty suffer? And where there is no such thing as fellow feeling or sympathy or love? Because the moment you make a man incapable of suffering as the result of the actions of his fellows, you've also created a man incapable of loving other people. A man devoid of all emotion. Face the facts. This is the way the world is made. It is a world in which we're all involved together, and in which our actions reach out and touch the lives of others. This is why I say that it's not God who causes man to suffer. Man brings suffering both on himself and upon his fellows. But here's another thought. Might it not help us to bear troubles and trials if we could see them as blessings in disguise? Now, don't dismiss this as trite nonsense or as an easy way out of the difficulty. There is more substance to the thought than that. It is a fact of human experience that good often comes out of what seems to be evil. It is also true that the discipline of suffering produces blessing. This is something that calls for faith, I agree. The faith to accept that God is working out something for us. There are so many Bible instances that reveal this. For example, God tested Abraham in this way, as Genesis 22 reveals. And that grand old man, Job, is another example. Joseph saw it because he said to his brothers, "You meant evil against me, but God meant it for good to save life." And in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul had a thorn in the flesh which he asked God to remove. And whatever that physical burden was, it wasn't removed. The answer came to him, "My grace is sufficient for thee, my strength is made perfect in weakness." And Paul learned a lesson from that, because later on he wrote, "I want you to know that the things that happened to me have fallen out to the furtherance of the gospel." Everything had turned out for the best, in other words. You see, our problem is accentuated because we tend to jump to conclusions, and usually the wrong ones at that. Take the lady whose letter I quoted. She wrote, "I fear I must say with Jacob, all these things are against me." But it's a great pity that she didn't read a little farther into the story of Jacob. True enough, he did say, in Genesis 42 verse 36, "All these things are against me." He thought at the time that he'd lost his sons Joseph and Simeon, and they were planning to take Benjamin from him too. And it was all too much for that poor old man. But had he only known it, Joseph was chancellor in Egypt. Simeon was his brother's honored guest in Egypt. And before very long, the entire family would be reunited in the plenty of Egypt. But then, you see, Jacob was always a pessimist. Even when they brought him the news that Joseph was really alive and in a position of honor in Egypt, he refused to believe it. And then we read, "When he saw the wagons which Joseph had sent, the spirit of Jacob revived, and he said, 'It is enough. My son Joseph is yet alive. I will go to see him before I die.'" Things were working together for good all the time, even when the outlook seemed darkest. And this is what Romans chapter 8, verse 28 teaches. "We know that to them that love God, all things work together for good, even to them that are called according to his purpose." Now notice, the Bible doesn't say that all things are pleasant, or that all things are good, but that all things work together for good. It seems that our ideas of what is good may be mistaken. The hymn writer said, "Judge not the Lord by feeble sense, but trust him for his grace. Behind a frowning providence, he hides a smiling face." Notice the words "work together," because it's the complete picture with all the parts together that proves the truth of the promise that things work together for good to them that love God. And if you have only one corner of the picture, you're going to judge wrongly. In conclusion, let me suggest that we don't solve the problem of suffering and pain by blaming God and saying that God doesn't care. Nor is it a solution either to try to protect God by saying, "Oh no, God has nothing at all to do with it." The fact is that God does know. God does see, He does understand, and He does care. But He sometimes allows us to pass through suffering in order to discipline us and to bring us to greater blessing. This may be difficult to accept, particularly in the heat of pain. But the faith of a Christian can accept it and can find blessing in it and comfort in it. And don't forget that while this may be only a partial answer to the problem of suffering, the difficulty confronting those who don't believe in God is far, far greater. The unbeliever still faces the problem of suffering. And for him, there is no way out. He cannot explain it. He cannot see any possibility of good coming from it. There is no purpose in it for him. Nor can he imagine anyone being able to do anything at all about it. A dismal outlook indeed. And a thoroughly hopeless philosophy. In times of suffering, to know that there is a God who cares and who is working out great issues in your life is a great blessing indeed. To be without God can only lead to despair.